sums it all up. Arsenal, the cream of the crop.
Welcome to this, the 56th edition of the Gouda podcast, recording on the Monday evening after Arsenal's 3-2 defeat at home to West Bromwich Albion and 24 hours before the Gunners face Partizan Belgrade. As usual, this podcast is sponsored by the website for all your best unofficial Arsenal t-shirts, GunaShirts.com. I'm your host, David Udo, and there's a little rotation on the panel for this recording. To kick us off on guitar, it's our man on the streets of Hampstead stalking the stars for us, singer Don Sebastiano.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because my voice is gone, so not singing that much these days. But I did stalk William Gallas recently.
Really?
More on that later.
More on that later. Next up, the return of the not-so-esteemed editor of the Gooner, a man who has had "I hate to say I told you so" by the hives ringing in his head all day, Mr. Kevin Witcher.
It is true, listeners, and I'd rather have egg on my face, although I'm actually going to be eating egg fried rice quite soon, but never mind.
And finally, a more occasional guest, and dare we venture, a close personal friend of the new Labour leader, Ed Miliband. From the corridors of power and the Arsenal Supporters Trust, Mr. Tim Payton.
Hello there. No, it was actually David's mate, so bad weekend.
Shoot the researcher.
It was just a speculative guess.
Although, Kevin, whilst we welcome Mr. Tim Payton, we may have been welcoming someone else, such as my understanding.
Well, as regular listeners may be aware, one of Don Sebastiano's buddies is the former Culture Club drummer and Spurs fan, Mr. John Moss.
Yeah, but he's not coming.
And the question for you is, we asked him, he did think about it.
Oh, yeah.
Do you think if the result had been different last Tuesday, he might have come?
Oh, yeah, definitely. He definitely bottled it.
Thanks, John.
So, without further ado, what to possibly talk about? Since the last podcast, we had 3 away games and 3 home games. Things for sheer optimism. Things for sheer pessimism, but let's not ignore the elephant in the room. What the hell happened on Saturday against West Bromwich Albion? Kevin Witcher.
I believe the team felt that they only had to turn up. And it's not the first time it's happened. I've seen Arsenal play like that before. I actually think we didn't play that much differently at Sunderland in some ways. We were just a bit more open. So I suspect that what I've described as the culture of complacency still runs rampant throughout the club, and players, I mean, you know, how many tackles did Diaby make?
According to football365.com this morning, during his 59 minutes on the pitch, Abu Diaby attempted 2 tackles, successfully completing none of them.
This is a holding central midfield player whose main job is to interrupt the pattern and flow of the opposition side. And that kind of symbolises the whole thing for me. It was a god-awful performance. The real question is, do we dismiss it as a bad day at the office or symptomatic of something greater? And my feeling is that we have a very inconsistent side and this is going to happen again this season.
Basti, in response to Kevin's question, is this a blip or is it symptomatic of a deeper underlying problem within the Arsenal first team squad?
Well, we've got, you know, this injury thing. Right, it's a bit like when Michael Corleone's missus, what's her name? The one, oh, bloody hell,
Diane Keaton.
Diane Keaton, she, you know, this Sicilian thing, you know, this injury thing, you know, this injury thing, Michael, it's an abortion, Michael. I'm sorry, but Arsenal at the moment, something's gone really wrong. We've got 7 players out, haven't we? 7 first team players?
Yep.
6, 7? And, you know, and apparently Diaby wasn't even 100% fit. And I really don't rate him as a first-team player. I still think we've got 1 or 2 players who just really, you know, whether they're in the squad or not is one thing. But
hang on, I just have to interject here. You're talking about injuries. Yeah. The goalkeeper, the back four and the 2 central holding players, that's 7 players. Only Vermaelen is not regarded as a first-choice player that didn't play that game. So you had 6 out of 7 guys there who are the first picks.
Well, hang on a minute. Who's out? You got Van Persie.
No, I'm talking about the defensive side of the team.
Right. Well, Almunia is not playing against
number one.
He's
not
playing
tomorrow,
is he?
More on Manuel later.
Once again, another injury. Apparently, he's injured.
Yeah, but
maybe his feelings are hurt.
My point is, the team against West Brom defensively was almost full strength in terms of the back seven, if you like. And there was one out for Marlin.
Yeah, it's true.
Almost full strength.
Yeah, so basically, you can't cope with one injury in the defensive part of your team, then you are in trouble.
So you consider Diaby a first choice player?
Oh no, the manager does more personally.
Yeah, I mean, no, I don't. But I mean, if it were a key game, if it was a Champions League final, I mean, obviously we're talking cloud cuckoo land here. But if it was. It was a game that mattered. I mean, we'll see what happens at Chelsea.
Well, our best 11 doesn't include Diaby, does it?
To you and I.
No, but you shouldn't be counting that because you can't play your best 11 against West Brom if you've got Partizan coming and if you've got Chelsea coming. You've got to have a best 18, and he is within our best 18.
Mm.
And that's the problem at the moment. The best 18
isn't
cut it.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't cut it. And the thing is, we've got substandard players, one or two or three or four, right, who need to be world-class players. I've been saying this for the last 3 years, but or 4 years. And we've got this injury China doll thing that, you know, how many games are we into the season? Four?
Eight games.
In all games.
Eight, league games?
Six Premier games.
Six Premiership games into the season, and seven of our players are injured.
Tim, what's Arsene Wenger thinking about his players after a game like West Brom? The manager very rarely was very vocal in criticism of the team, saying that he did not recognise them and they got exactly what they deserved.
Well, a bit like the team, I didn't turn up on Saturday. I was at a wedding, so. But it might mean I've actually read a bit more of the follow-up to try and work out what happened. And his comments weren't normal. It appeared he was as shell-shocked as everybody there. But he is the man who has to motivate a team like that, and clearly something just went wrong in the attitude. Was it 120 minutes in their legs, and also the feeling that if you can do what they did at Tottenham, that they could just do it against West Brom without trying?
Perhaps his selection suggested that.
Well, I think
they were
attitude.
Already looking forward. They were already got their mind on these two big away games, which were, we all assumed were the test. And it was just turn up and sort West Brom out. What's even more worrying, maybe, is that we've got done by a team that comes to the Emirates to play football, as opposed to the other model that comes to park the bus. So, you know, either tactic has got a chance against us now.
Well, are we being too harsh on Arsenal? I mean, from where I was sitting, I thought West Brom were fantastic. I thought the way that they pressed when they didn't have the ball, that their players didn't stop running. I thought Odin Wingé in particular was outstanding. And everything we threw at them, their back seven, was completely impervious to everything. I thought in particular, bearing in mind, we went through a selection of bargain centre-half rumours in the summer, Emir Spahic and the like. Seeing people like Pablo Ibanez and Jonas Olsen looking fantastic for my money, you know, maybe, you know, we're reading too much into it.
I think attitude is the word that Tim just mentioned. And I think players like Andre Arshavin, actually Diaby again, certain players, there's no spine there. It seems to me that they're a bit pampered, overpaid over here, and I don't really think some of the players are fighting. The thing is, you know, teams like West Brom, when they turn up and want it, any team that really wants it against Arsenal can get a result. And I was strangely just reading today in the gym that the Tony Parsons thing, who he's got this new book out, and he's got this section called Fever Bitch, right? And it's all about Arsenal and football and how it's all gone. And he mentioned William Gallas and the, you know, sitting crying and kicking the hoarding and all that stuff. And he said, when he saw that, he said, that's it, I've had enough of it. He's had enough of this kind of attitude of players who, you know, where are the Tony Adamses? Where are the Martin Keown's? Where are the George, well, I was going to say George Graham there, but as a manager, maybe. But, you know, compared to some of the players we've got now, they get blown over by a piece of wind. And it's not that. I see Arshavin and what he's capable of and what he does, and there's a big gap between the two at the moment for me, I think. Yeah. And that goes through the team. I'm not blaming Arshavin in particular. The whole team, that Victoria Concordia, we're going to have them spirit, just isn't there.
It's a bit deeper than just attitude, though, isn't it? It's the football philosophy and construct that Wenger has put together. When it works, it's brilliant. But it can't grind out 1-0s. Mm. If the football doesn't click, they're in trouble. They don't pull you off for 1-0 wins 4 or 5 times a year when they play badly. So if they do hit and it just isn't working, it falls apart. They can't adapt. It gives us some fantastic 4, 5, 6-0s, but it's always going to give us a 2 or 3 games because it hasn't got that dig in, tough it out, solid defence, and one moment of magic. It's not there.
In a word, Cesc Fabregas. I mean, he's probably the only player who you'd say would fit into the invincible side, into the, you know, unbeatables, and into the... He's the sort of player you'd always have on your team. And there are players in the Premiership now who you say, yes, you know, you want that. They are proper football players all round, that get stuck in, don't complain, you know, get up when they're knocked down and all that. And but there's a lot, unfortunately, it's not what it used to be when I was a lad.
Motivation's a very, very key point, actually. I mean, lest we forget, our captain on Saturday was our goalkeeper. Well, sorry, the bloke wearing the grey jersey between the sticks. I, as a goalkeeper myself, I wish to be disassociated with the waiter masquerading as a number one. The man is the captain. We see this video that plays on the big screens now 5 minutes before kickoff, and you see the likes of Tony Adams and Frank McClintock shaking their fists, screaming, fucking come on.
Yeah.
You don't get that with this Arsenal team. I mean, the manager apparently likes to preach silence on the pitch. He likes his players to just know where they are. There is no screaming and shouting. And you, personally, I think that's one of the reasons we didn't end up signing Thomas Sorensen, a goalkeeper very much in the Jens Lehmann mould, who will tell his clueless centre-halves when they're out of position. Is there an argument that motivation is a problem? And does, notwithstanding his new three-year contract, can the manager still motivate the players? Tim?
We'll know that in about 5 days, but it does seem that at times he's struggling
to motivate the players. He sort of believes in this mutual leadership or whatever it is, where everyone's just got it built into them. I mean, having a goalkeeper as captain, even if they're a fantastic goalkeeper, it must be the wrong decision. They're not in the middle of it all. They can't constantly be in the face of the referee, showing some leadership to their teammates, you know, confronting the hard tackle and so on. That is wrong, isn't it? Even if Almunia was as solid as they come, it's still not the right position to be captain, and it shows his mentality towards what the captain position does, which partly sums up that whole thing, I think, about how he approaches football. It's right on the edge. When it works, it clicks, it's brilliant, but he doesn't have the mixture of ingredients that you need. The toughness, the hardness, the get stuck in, the roll your sleeves up on a bad day. It's just not built in.
Well, the other thing is that the players have to respect the captain, and you do have to wonder how many of the outfield players, I mean, most of whom I think are all internationals, actually respect Almunia based on A, ability, and B, his character. I mean, he's a nice guy, but look at him at set pieces. And, you know, if he had the personality of a captain, let's say, you could argue Schmeichel had the respect, you know, associated with a captain, even if he was a goalkeeper. You know, you think a captain type would come clattering out and just make that area his own and take everything with him. You know, we're not getting that kind of character from any of our keepers at the moment. So to make any of them captain is foolish. And I just think the players don't respect the guy, and so it's a bit pointless.
What about the relationship between the players and the manager? Do you think it's based on respect, or do you think it's based on fear? Well, probably too much respect and not enough fear.
I think they appreciate what he's done for them every time they look at their bank balance. But I suspect he doesn't ball them out often enough. And it's a problem in the game that obviously the players have all the power now because of the salaries they command. But at the same time, there is a balance to be found. You can do it. Ancelotti, I think, Mourinho, Ferguson... You know, these managers that win titles have got the balance. They've got superstar players being paid a hell of a lot of money, some of them quite young. But they have a way to retain their respect and get them performing for them. I don't think Wenger has that. I think it's become too cosy. There's not enough character in the squad. And that's partly down to the way the players have been dealt with. A, by the manager, B, by the club, because they are so cosseted now. I'm actually tempted now to think that things are not going to improve under Arsene.
On the bright side, I think we've got to bear in mind the way I see it is there's no Vermaelen at the moment, right? If you have Vermaelen back, you have Fabregas back, you've got Van Persie back. I also think, I don't know why, you know, it's so obvious to me when a player like Diaby is taken off when we're 2-0 down, Rosicki comes on, and then, all right, they get another goal, but still, it, you know, things... But play, like, for me, like, Rosicki versus Diaby, it's no contest, you know. They're just, you know, one player is a pitch-aware player who knows what's around him, will pass the ball, who'll make things happen, who'll create stuff. Diaby's a player who will get the ball, turn attack into defence, lose the ball, show us a few Kanu-esque tricks... you know, I'm sorry, he is talented, but I don't see him as a professional footballer or to that the level that I want at Arsenal in the midfield. And I do that on the captain front. You know, okay, if Captain Cesc was in town, we'd have a completely different result then, I think, as well. Unfortunately, we are a bit of a one-man team because the end of last season proved it. Cesc went away, everything fell to bits. Now again, he's not there, and you know, we could have thrown, you know, the Tottenham match could have thrown that away actually at one point. And I do think that Vermaelen is looking for me as someone who was Cesc not on the pitch, was Vermaelen fit, you know, Almunia wouldn't get the armband. I think Vermaelen is someone who's got sort of a bit Tony-esque captain potential going for him in the future. Just the way he turned up. He turns up at Arsenal, starts run up the pitch, scores a couple of goals. He's a bit have a go. He's got weaknesses, but he has a go. And I think Koscielny and Squillaci, yet to be proven, but they are the sort of centre-back kind of people you want. They look like centre-backs, at least. At least they're kind of, you know, unlike Gallas, who was neither a captain nor a centre-back, in my opinion. I'm sorry, I think his morale, the whole in-the-dressing-room thing, his ego just got in the way of once again that victory through unity thing.
Well, I think you're right, Bassett. I mean, yeah, okay, we're all doom and gloom after the West Brom game, and looking at our timer, we're 14 minutes of whinging into that. But you know, I mean, we've played 8 games this season. We've had more wins than defeats, yeah. and you know, there have been some players that have impressed. I mean, you talk about Scalacci and Koscielny, who look like proper centre halves. Sami Nasri has gone from being. You know, where does he fit in? Is he a winger? Is he an inside player? To being arguably our most effective attacking player this year. And Marouane Chamakh looks like the best parts of Bentner and Van Persie ran together, only without glass ankles. Tim, there must be some signs for optimism around the club, must there?
Oh, of course there is. And, you know, doesn't the mood swing quickly as a football fan? I mean, I enjoyed Tuesday night at White Hart Lane. Probably the last time I came out of a ground feeling like that was probably Milan a couple of years ago after the Champions League game, when you felt, you know, is this a game where a young team has really shown what it's got and we're on the move again and where it's going? It's just that we've seen these fault lines, we've seen these concerns for 4 or 5 years and they keep coming back. Only 2 or 3 weeks ago, the manager's telling us it's changed, they've matured, they're stronger. And I think in a way we don't cut any slack at the moment. We'll have such a better picture after these next 2 games. A really hostile Champions League game away and then Chelsea. And that will show you a lot about attitude and a lot about, in a way, you know, you are, you know, doesn't every team get 1 or 2 bizarre results?
Chelsea lost to Wigan twice, lost to Wigan away last year.
Where it all goes horribly wrong. The problem is, doesn't feel like you can say with Arsenal, that's 1 in 40. It feels more like it's 1 in 10.
Yeah, I mean, I think Chelsea are actually so good this season that you just can't afford to drop cheap points. And I remember last season in Spain, Real Madrid actually had an incredible season. I think they ended up with about 97 points or something, and yet the manager got the sack because Barcelona got 2 more. So sometimes you just have to face the reality that you're probably not going to win the league unless you literally win it, you know, every point you should. I think that is going to be one of these seasons. I do actually think Chelsea are so much stronger than the other sides that it could become a procession. I hope not, but I have that feeling.
It's a Chelsea team that struggled against the Manchester City side without a first-choice right-back or any real potent attacking threat, save for an Argentinian reject from Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. Who have we got back for the Chelsea match?
I don't... Fabregas, hopefully.
Vermaelen, hopefully.
Well, I'm sure he'll play them if he possibly can. I mean,
probably our 2 best players.
Yeah. Oh, and Almunia.
gets over his little shoulder knock.
Is this a shoulder knock?
Elbow.
Is
this elbow?
Sure? Elbow is it? Elbow.
An elbow knock. I mean,
well, I was going to move on to the Carling Cup win over Spurs, but you know, it's the other elephant in the room that we can't ignore.
I have a story.
Kevin, tell me a story.
I've been told, and I think this is bullshit. All right, but I've been told that Fabianski refused to replace Lehmann on Saturday. That Lehmann.
I wish we had. I would really settle for Lehmann coming back for Tuesday.
If only. Oh, hello. But bear with me. Bastille will continue.
Yeah, we'll have to come back to Kevin in a minute as our Chinese takeaways arrive. He has to go and deal with that. Bastille, the goalkeeper situation. Have our chickens come home to roost, and where do we go from here?
Well, I don't know what you mean by that. I don't see any chickens anywhere. But
I don't know. I saw a coward in goal on Saturday afternoon.
Well, let's put it this way: Wenger had a chance to buy a player, a goalkeeper, didn't do it. Almunia's already two big clangers this season, isn't it? Or three?
Well, two in the same game, I'd say. Mm.
There was one earlier somewhere, I seem to remember.
Oh, Liverpool game. Liverpool. That was a could have done better rather than a clanger. But
and Fabianski, let's face it. I mean, the Tottenham goal, you know, most top-class keepers would have got to that sort of shimmied whatever it was that Keane sent that way. Well, we don't have a top-class keeper. And Almunia is a good keeper, as George Graham said in one of the papers recently. But he's not world-class, and We need a Schmeichel, a Seaman, a keeper who's going to win us, you know, 12 points a season. Because a world-class keeper is worth 12 points a season.
Tim, we've got 20 games in October, November and December before the transfer window's open. We have Manuel Almunia, Łukasz Fabianski, Wojciech Szczęsny and Vito Minone. Where do we go from here in terms of between the sticks?
I don't know. Maybe we send the Premier League a sick note saying they've all got manic depression and can we replace one of them? Because I think there's a little bit of truth in that. I mean, one of the problems with Almunia is very highly strong, and definitely, you know, Wenger, some of what comes out of his mouth defending him, which is just ludicrous to all of our mindsets, but what he's desperately trying not to do is further knock the confidence of a player who's fragile like that. Some players would thrive under the challenge, wouldn't they? They'd be out there, chef pussed up, yeah. I'll show you. Yeah. You know, that's not the Almunia style. He was rested last year because of basically some short-term, you know, depression issues and not feeling great and so on, and the confident dives. Mm. The manager is totally stuck now. Everybody knows he was going after a goalkeeper, including his goalkeepers, but as he hasn't got one, he's got to talk them up, which probably makes himself look more ludicrous with his other 10 outfield players, let alone us lot. Well, they have just created a horrible, horrible rod for their own backs, and it is going to be... Did you say 20 games?
Oh, I think it's 20 games in October, God. November and December.
Oh, no.
Kev, you're in the process of telling us something with regards to mental fragility. I can't help but feel that these stories on the same lines. Why don't you continue?
Well, basically, I mean, Fabianski reputedly would have come on at half time on Saturday, but there was some tom-tom or whatever, and he just refused to do it. So there is an argument that Almunia was injured in the second
half. I heard that as well.
Which, I mean, if this elbow injury is true, then you can say, yeah, you know, fair enough. I mean, maybe he shouldn't have been playing. But I just personally cannot accept the concept that a reserve, the substitute goalkeeper would refuse to come on. I just don't.
Well, I heard it slightly different, that there was a knock, but that the manager didn't want the reserve goalkeeper to come on, because at the time when it was 0-0, he perceived a slightly injured Almunia as better than Fabianski, who some people say he's told his coaching staff he never wants to play for the club again.
Which then brings us to the point, what is he doing on the bench for that game? Why would you put him on the bench if you had no intention of playing the guy?
Is it because Wojciech Szczęsny came out vocally last week and said it is my time to shine, and the last thing the manager could possibly do is let a player with that much self-confidence talk his way into the side?
Well, I mean, my question for you as our goalkeeping correspondent is the the idea that he is in the last year of his contract actually true?
It's very, it's completely and utterly true. He signed on a 4-year deal, which is the longest he was allowed to in his age group, 3.5 years ago. There was a worry whether he'd be kept on after a freak training ground incident when he broke both arms doing too many weights in the gym. In showing off to some of the other youth players, the bell bar went behind his head and broke both arms.
Oh my god!
But you know,
so he's clever,
right, kid? Could be just what we need. Actually, yeah. He doesn't give a damn about being hurt.
15 games being the best player at Brentford has made him think he's this generation's Lev Yashin.
Well, he's obviously not for the manager. Otherwise, he would have secured him by now, which basically leads me to believe that he is Sylvain Wiltord in 2004, i.e. a player who everyone knows is departing and the manager isn't going to bother playing.
Yeah, he's in the squad for the game against Partizan tomorrow night, and there's no sign of the lesser-spotted Vitolas Mononius.
His contract will be renewed, will be upgraded. I was told that by someone very senior from the club last week, and that will come through in the next few weeks.
And is the
player... If he accepts it, of course, but no, that absolutely...
Moving now.
The intention, it was part of the wider explanation of why we've got to have a continually increasing wage bill and the upward pressure. He's one of those that is next in line to have the enhanced contract.
Right.
Well, could it just be that actually Almunia's elbow is... sounds like a poem of some sort, doesn't it? So that is, it's just the manager dropping him because he's...
Well, it's often been the theory that Almunia's injuries are not always genuine. And sometimes... I mean, there was a death in the family a year ago, which people didn't believe, and in fact, it turned out to be true.
It shows you how useless he is that the press won't even dig to find out that much gossip about him.
Well, perhaps it does show you how he does struggle with this kind of mental strength, and that if he has got a bit of a knock, it's part of that attitude about, do I play through it, or don't I? I don't remember goalkeepers, players... having little knocks as much 10-20
years
ago.
Well, I'll tell you what, Bob Wilson, no gloves, in the mud, freezing cold, throwing himself at people's feet.
Bert Trautmann played on with a broken neck, lest we forget.
I think we're lacking. It's not just, you can't, another thing, having been a B-team goalkeeper myself once at Hampstead Comprehensive School, I can tell you that...
That classic lineup.
Everyone always blames the keeper, right? You're standing, everyone's shouting at the keeper. Now, what the bloody hell's the ball doing there in the first... What, you know, let's get it up. Attack is the best form of defence. But I've got to say that Almunia, we need a bit of Dunkirk spirit throughout the side. If we had that, the goalkeeper would be under less pressure. You know, we do not have... That as once again the Tony Adams. That, well, we've got our full complement. We've got Fabregas, we've got Vermaelen, we've got Van Persie up front, and with Arshavin and/or Rosicki, we've got a pretty good Nasri. We've got there's that spine that we used to have when it was Seaman, Adams, Wright. You know, with kind of Bergkamp moving around or something.
Well, is Song an equivalent to Vieira?
He's not bad, Song.
Only
he's
in the sense right. They both have a head.
He's all no, but I
he
like,
didn't do
I
very well
like
on Saturday.
Well, no, but without Fabregas by his side. See, if
no, but Fabregas plays
by
ahead
by
of him. You've got two holding central midfield players, and my argument was we should have bought a partner, a decent partner for Song in the summer, because it's key to protect the defence and the keeper, you know, as much as you can. And I mean, Song, I think, could be one of a decent pair.
Yeah.
Jack Wilshere has been playing there as the holding player with
him. An education.
Yeah, I mean, he's got bite and he's got tackle, but ultimately his talents are possibly wasted there. And I'm pretty sure that when Cesc does go next summer, we'll find that Wilshere is probably the player who gets a chance to replace him. So I don't think we are strong enough in that part of the field. So when we talk about a spine, you know, you've got Song there, but it's just him. You know, if you look back on the great Arsenal teams, there was always a couple of them.
Yeah.
Just a very quick... Sorry, going back to the goalkeepers very, very, very quickly. Tim, as our man on the inside, why was a goalkeeper not bought when Peter Hill-Wood, as always, gets caught coming out of lunch a bit pissed by a journalist from the Daily Star back in May admitted that Arsenal were bidding for Mark Schwarzer. May became June, subsequently July, August, and we're in this situation on August the 31st where we are still unable to complete a deal for Mark Schwarzer, despite him apparently being the man that manager's only target. Why was the goalkeeper not bought? Was it bargaining? Was it sheer ineptitude on the part of Gazidis and his cronies?
It was probably a little bit of both, and one other factor going on, which was that Schwarzer wasn't actually the first target. My reading of the tea leaves is he was the backup target. It's widely known now, I think, that at the beginning of the summer, the big bid went in for Reina.
Right.
The £20 million bid went in for Reina. And they were hoping that the player wants out and Liverpool's financial situation would see it happen. So definitely had advanced talks with Shay Given, which you could have said, why are you wasting your breaths? They won't let him come to us. I think that Schwarzer was almost the backup. Oh, he can, and if he, you know, backup stroke, if he comes in, plays a few games, moves on to becoming a coach, gives a bit of solidity there, and maybe something else will happen alongside it. When a couple of big moves weren't moving, and nothing moved in the transfer market this summer, unless you were City with ridiculous money, clubs had sussed that the money they got for selling a player, they weren't able to use it to go and get one from anywhere else. It's a bit like when house markets grind down for a while. I think that then they were just too laid back and felt that they picked Schwarzer up on the final day.
Yeah.
And then when, is it Stockdale, David got Stockdale injured, they just had nowhere to go. And it's, you know, quite frankly, not good enough, is it? I mean, even a week before the window, you make sure something could happen. But so it's even more frustrating to know that they were prepared to write out the cheque for £20 million to get the goalkeeper that would make the difference. Now they have to weigh up, do you move in January from maybe not your long-term ideal target and the cup-tied situation? But I just sense, and again, there was some hints coming through from some chats next week, I think they will do something in January.
That's interesting. There's a lot of truth apparently in the rumour that Reina was Wenger's first choice. Then,
oh, he was. They bid for Reina.
The problem we've got though now is that we can't buy anyone until January.
We've got 20 games.
20 games with Almunia and Fabianski. That's it, isn't it?
No, I mean you've basically written off a season. I mean, you know, through that casual approach in the summer towards a replacement. Arsenal always like to try and drive a hard bargain, often leave it late, and you know they are going to get caught out. I mean, I remember the summer when, I don't know how close it was, but we were a couple of million short for Alonso, who Real Madrid bought for a lot more money a year later.
Didn't that transpire that was Liverpool leading us a merry dance?
And, well, I mean, they wanted Gareth Barry, and if they'd have got him, then they would have let him go. So it was a bit like a chain there. But if we really meant business, we should have forced the issue by paying them enough so that they could get Barry and getting Alonso. Because that was the season, I think 2008-2009, when we really were never at the races. I mean, we were out of it by October, from memory.
It's a pattern that repeats itself. Again, another bid that went in this summer was £16 million for Jagielka.
Mm.
Everton turned around and said, we got £24 million for Lescott and we value him more highly. So that's where you've got to start. Probably, quite rightly, Arsenal said, a player coming back from a cruciate who's not that stunning is not worth £25 million. But that's what they were hitting. You know, I don't know how high they went for Reina, but I think at the time, Liverpool just weren't going to sell because they were trying to get the sale through, and getting the sale through actually required having something decent to sell. But the point is that between the manager and the chief exec and the others in the club, you'd have thought that by the time August ticked round, they'd have worked out they had to do something.
Mm. Yeah, well, it looks like there's a lot of fumbling going on, and not, you know, no real hardcore decisions saying, oh, you know, there's a lot of buck passing and waiting and seeing and
worrying about the
finances.
You know, I mean, a bit too much.
Yeah, too much. And the team is starting, it looks to me like the team's kind of coming second to our marvellous profit and bank balance situation.
Yeah, I don't mind them refusing to pay silly money for Jagielka. What I do then want is for their scouting system to kick in and say, okay, you can't get this guy for £16 million, but there's a bloody decent fella over here for £7 or 8 million. Now that may be Koscielny, although he was signed early. In the end, we got Scalacci because of numbers. You know, we just didn't have enough. Now, might turn out to be an inspired signing. I don't know. It's too early to say. But, you know, there are other positions which needed addressing, which we had the finance to address. It didn't happen. And I think that's borders on negligence, frankly. Mm. You know, we've got money in the bank which, you know, doesn't actually serve us well on the field at the moment. It's just lying there, gaining a bit of interest. Well, football fans don't want to watch balance sheets. You know, they want to watch football. A team that can win trophies.
So two questions for each of you. We'll go, the first one, I'll ask you all individually. 20 games, October, November, December. Mm. All four of our goalkeepers are fit. Who's your Arsenal number one, Kevin Whitcher?
Oh, undoubtedly the younger Pole, Chesney, as I call him. I mean, he is the best keeper at the club. And, you know, we've all heard how old Casillas was when he made his impact. I think Manninger did well when he was used. Stuart Taylor did well when he was used. Wenger has used young keepers before and been successful. Now, obviously, Manninger had some problems later down the line and lost form. But I certainly think given the alternatives, this guy's got to be worth a look.
Tim, you're Arsenal goalkeeper for the next 3 months.
Until the weekend, I would have said you need to go with Almunia, and you know most of the time he's fine. But given where we are now, I don't see what you've got to lose from trying the young Polish goalkeeper. It can't do any harm, can it? Can't get worse.
No.
Basti, is it the hat trick? Is it the match ball for Wojciech Szczęsny?
Yeah, if I could pronounce his name. I haven't actually seen him play.
No, so, nor have I. Nor
yeah, neither Arsenal of most fans. Arsenal
but
fans.
But I haven't seen him play, so it's hard to say. But let's put it this way. As Sybil once said to Basil, he can't do any worse than, you know, Manuel and the other
Lukasz,
one. And the major.
Well,
I mean, let's put it this way. Fabianski's, I've seen him a couple of times and it's just not strong enough.
That's a player whose confidence is completely shattered.
Obviously shattered. Almunia's not far behind him looking at the tabloids today. I mean, if he's allowed to read English newspapers, he's going to be, the thing is, you know, at the risk of being politically incorrect, you know, that the Spanish, the French, the, you know, they never really had a lot of that, what we might call Dunkirk spirit. And I think it's horrible the way the press slag people off and do things to them. But, you know, I think mental strength, as Monsieur Wenger likes to put it, is something that there isn't quite enough of. And just emotional strength, actually, I think you need in this game these days as well.
It was only 15 months ago that Fabio Capello was trying to get him an English passport.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's ridiculous, isn't it?
That's what a season on loan for Birmingham can do for you. And I am the only Arsenal fan, I'm sure, who would install a Ron Greenwood-like rotation policy between Vito Minone and Wojciech Szczęsny, as it takes the pressure off if they make a couple of mistakes, knowing full well that they've got a game off. But there we go, that's just me. That's unfortunately... Oh no, it's not quite all we've got time for. Very quickly, despite all this doom and gloom and this pessimism, the fact we haven't got a goalkeeper, the fact we missed out on Pepe Reina and Phil Jagielka, as far as I can tell, we've had 8 games so far this season, 6 in the league, a huge 6-0 against Braga in the Champions League, and of course the bending over of Tottenham at Scheidfart Lane. We've won 3, drawn 2 and lost 1. Based on what we've seen so far, Basti, can it be Arsenal's year? Very quickly.
That wasn't bending over, that was bum rape of the highest thing. Can it be Arsenal's season, did you say?
Very quickly, yes.
God, no.
Kevin Whitcher.
I'm afraid we will fall short through a mixture of the defensive situation and injuries.
Tim.
It can't be the season to, I don't think, win the big two tournaments. The interesting thing is that's accepted a little bit more inside the setup, because they could well win the two minor cups with the talent they have, and if they focused on them, they've got teams that are built for that kind of competition. But will they do that?
Cool, the domestic cups. That's a fantastic topic for a podcast. Can we win the Carling Cup?
We're back to where we were with George Graham.
Will Arsene Wenger stick the first team out when we play Yeovil at home on a Saturday? You'll have to tune in next week to find out, as that's your lot for this time. Just a time for the usual reminder that if you want to email us about anything related to the podcast, our address is goonapodcast@gmail.com. So thanks once again to our sponsors, goonashirts.com. And there's just time for our panel to bid farewell. Tim?
Till the next time.
Basti.
Ta-ra.
And Kevin.
Make sure that pizza doesn't burn back.
Yeah, exactly. La-di-da-di-da.
And I'm your host, David Dillon. Thank you for listening. La-di-da-di-da. La-di-da-di-dee. All good friends and jolly good company. Way!